You know, when I was young, I was taught you gotta dance with them that brought you. So when I hear a politician make a very fine speech, I go to vote smart and see who's funding him. And then I know who they're dancing with.
As Democracy Spring rolls on at the Capitol, hundreds are arrested to get money out of politics, to ensure voting rights, and to advocate for racial justice.
We are tired of seeing black and brown brothers and sisters, especially our sisters now, where in D.C. 30% of the lockups of teenagers are young black women being incarcerated.
All that and more coming up. And welcome to On the Ground, Voices of Resistance from the Nation's Capital on 89.3 WPFW, your station for jazz and justice, for Friday, April 15, 2016. I'm Esther Evarim on what is usually tax day, though if you're filing, you have until Monday this year to get those taxes in. We have some news today about our taxes, and according to the National Priorities Project, 27% of which goes directly to the military, industrial, prison, and spying complex, including arms manufacturers and dealers. And that's just one estimate. There are a lot of estimates that are a lot higher. And speaking of money, there's a huge mobilization, Democracy Spring and Democracy Awakening, happening right here, right now in D.C. As of yesterday, more than 600 people have been arrested at the Capitol in protest against money in politics, for voting rights, for one person, one vote. Democracy Spring and Democracy Awakening are tying together a myriad of issues, from climate change to state violence to gentrification, under the banner that millionaires, billionaires, and the corporatocracy have control over our supposedly free and fair elections, and how the public treasure is spent or not spent. We'll hear voices from the racial justice rally, part of Democracy Spring, today. And on Sunday, Bill Fletcher of Arise and I will be anchoring a broadcast from Democracy Awakening at the Capitol. That is actually still being worked out, but hopefully we can make that happen. And there's a hard-hitting lineup on Sunday, including the Reverend William Barber of the Moral Mondays movement, Sweet Honey and the Rock, and leaders from a variety of social justice organizations. And in the second half, Resisting Arrest, a new poetry anthology, includes more than 80 poets speaking out, writing out on issues of police and state violence. Poet and editor of the anthology, Tony Medina, is expected to be with us. So as always, we have a lot for you in this hour, starting with our headlines and our geopolitical analyst, Gerald Horn. Well, Democracy Spring protesters are not the only ones in the streets. Fast food, home care, child care, and other underpaid workers across the country intensified their demand for $15 an hour and union rights yesterday at strikes and protests in more than 300 cities. Support protests span 40 countries around the world in the global movement to hold companies like McDonald's accountable. In New York City, striking workers held an evening march from Times Square, where the fight for 15 began in 2012, across town to a 1,000 a plate GOP gala featuring Donald Trump, Ted Cruz, and John Kasich, all of whom oppose raising wages. Here in D.C., home care workers joined with airport workers at a press conference with Mayor Muriel Bowser, who announced her support for a 15-an-hour minimum wage in the city. Home care worker Tiffany Hunter spoke.
I was even threatened by a manager that if I wanted to join the union, that I would be let go. So I'm not scared of the threats. I'm here and I'm fighting for the $15.
A broad coalition in D.C. also announced a year ago a push for a ballot initiative to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour. That initiative is in the process of gathering signatures and could be on the ballot this November. Almost exactly a year after Freddie Gray's arrest and death in police custody in Baltimore, Maryland General Assembly passed police reform legislation this week. Late Monday, negotiators ironed out details in a police accountability package that puts civilians on police officer disciplinary boards, sets tougher training standards, and encourages law enforcement agencies across the state to develop better relationships with the communities they police. It also reduces the number of days that police officers have to secure a lawyer in cases when they kill or brutalize someone from 10 days to 5 days. Progressives also want other criminal justice and clean energy reforms, but now Governor Larry Hogan must sign the bills. And our final news item is all also about the Benjamin. So far, the other shoe has not dropped in the hack of Mossack Fonseca. Responding to accusations of Western and U.S. bias, the journalist group that released this information about millions being stashed offshore said that a list of U.S. individuals and groups involved would be released this week, but so far it has not been released. And in a coup, it seems, for the Bernie Sanders presidential campaign, the former federal regulator responsible for jailing dozens of bankers in the 1980s savings and loan scandal has joined the Bernie Sanders campaign, giving the campaign needed ammunition in what has become a big fight over whether the Sanders plan to break up the big banks is possible. Well, with me in studio for this segment and for our culture and media moment is our favorite geopolitical analyst, Gerald Horn. Good morning, Gerald.
Good morning to you.
So what do you think about this update with what's happening with Mossack Fonseca? When we talked about it last week, you said the other shoe would drop, but I haven't heard any shoe.
Well, it's very curious. You may recall that at his annual four-hour press conference, Russian President Vladimir Putin brought up this data dump out of Panama, and it was his conclusion that in the first place, the data dump was designed to sully his reputation by pointing to those around him, although, of course, he is not mentioned in the data dump. And in fact, according to Mr. Putin, his personal worth is rather tidy and rather small. It's very curious, I must say, that not more U.S. nationals have been mentioned. The Wall Street Journal mentioned last week that David Geffen, the music and film impresario, former partner of Steven Spielberg, was mentioned in the data dump. Of course, he's a major funder of Democratic Party politicians. But we're waiting with bated breath to see what other revelations will come from Mossack and Fonseca.
Also, this week, Oxfam put out a report about an opaque and secretive network of subsidiaries and how they've stashed $1.4 trillion offshore. And this is not really kind of hitting the big news. And it also named, for tax avoidance, 50 of the largest U.S. companies, including Goldman Sachs, Verizon Communications, Apple. So this is kind of another shoe, but it's a different story that's not getting the same type of splash.
It certainly isn't. And once again, I think that we of the progressive movement must keep our eye on the big picture. The big picture is that the United States is waging a kind of low-intensity conflict against other tax avoidance havens. Recall the UBS scandal a few years ago, which forced Switzerland to engage in more transparency. Transparency rules in the United States itself is not followed. Now we have Panama, another competitor in terms of tax avoidance havens, is under fire and is being compelled to observe transparency rules the United States does not observe.
Right.
So it seems to me this story gets more curious and more curious with every passing moment.
Right. So I want to kind of switch to our culture and media portion of our talk, and you're going to be at Red Emma's in Baltimore tonight and at Sankofa tomorrow with your two books, Confronting Black Jacobins, which we've talked about a lot on this show, the U.S., the Haitian Revolution, and the origins of the Dominican Republic, and also your newest book, Paul Robeson, The Artist as Revolutionary. So give us a little taste of what you've kind of uncovered in your biography of Paul Robeson that we may not know already.
Well, first of all, with regard to Red Emma's tonight, wear your Sunday best because it'll be broadcast on C-SPAN.
Oh, okay.
And who knows? I mean, you, Hollywood producer might be watching.
Whatever. Okay. All right.
But with regard to Robeson, what I tried to concentrate on was the fact that, like many artists, black artists in particular, who found their fame and fortune abroad before returning to the United States, that also holds true for Robeson. He lived in London for most of the 1920s and 1930s. That's where he catapulted to fame and fortune. Would have stayed in London indefinitely, but for the outbreak of World War II in Europe in August 1939, which then brought him back to North America and a bit of misfortune.
Okay. So that's Red Emmas tonight and Sankofa tomorrow. And you heard him. You should wear your Sunday best, but you know, whatever. So thank you, Gerald. And we hope to see you tonight and tomorrow at your talks.
Thank you.
Well, those are our headlines and happenings. When we come back, Mass Movement and Voices of Democracy Spring. Stay with us.
Yes, sir. You know, Tuba.
I got the sounds of the legendary.
What? Foundation. Coming to touch your mind.
Foundation.
We coming out the fifth guy.
And you don't stop.
Keep on. Did you listen and stop what you're doing and set a devotion? Switzerland. Shut it. Go check it out. We got the hot music. The hot music. The hot music, yo, we on some hot music, the hot music, the hot music, check it out, performing all come together, things fall apart, that's when the music start, once again it's the thought, South Philly, Dalai Lama, Roots, Crew, Black Thought, this directed to whoever and listen and rage, yo, the whole state of things and the world bound to change, black rain falling from the sky looks strange, together with red hot, we stepping on flames, hey yo, it's inflation on the price for fame.
And welcome back to On the Ground, onthegroundshow.org at 89.3 WPFW Washington. I'm Esther Averam. Now, following a 10-day, 140-mile march from Philadelphia to Washington, D.C., thousands are gathering this week in our nation's capital to demand Congress take immediate action to end the corruption of big money in our politics and ensure free and fair elections in which every American has an equal voice. Wednesday, the focus was on racial justice, and here are just some of the voices from the rally held in Columbus Circle in front of Union Station. Before those gathered, there were like hundreds of people out before they marched to the east entrance of the Capitol where the rally continued, and many in the crowd prepared to be arrested. More than 600 people have been arrested so far. The first voices you'll hear are April Goggins of Black Lives Matter DC, Stuart Anderson, and Shawnee Smith, organizers with Democracy Spring.
I just wanted to say that if you are risking arrest, that it's incredibly important for you to remember that it's a privilege to be able to do that as a statement, and that every day in this country, mass incarceration is like a last name to so many people. And that the fact that a lot, not only are black folks more likely, and this is all black folks, this is trans black folks, queer black folks, non-gender conforming black folks, are locked up at a staggering rate that is more likely than anyone else. We die more often in prison. We die more often on the way to prison. Yesterday was a year since Freddie Gray's arrest, and so I feel that I need to uplift his name. Three years ago, if you remember, a woman was shot in front of the Capitol in her car with her baby. That's Miriam Carey. And so I lift this up for you guys today to really think about these things.
How you doing?
Because you can't choose what kind of democracy to fight for. It's all of us or it's none of us.
Thank you, April. So now, one of the things that is so important to any struggle is to understand the long train and the arc that is bent. And so we always have to have some voices from the past. And so what I'd like for y'all to do is give us a thundering roar for our next speaker, Gloria Lander.
I'm always glad to see that the fruits that we struggled for so long in the South and across the country are bearing fruit today in 2016. I started going to jail in 1962 in Mississippi, Jackson, Mississippi. But today, you have more complications. I'm looking at money out of politics, cold pink right there. Sister, I want to lift you up there. But I get very distraught when we say that Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act has been tampered with by the United States Supreme Court, which gave us at least the right to vote in the South and in other areas that are very hard for us to enter into because of the restrictions and harassment from officials, and for the Supreme Court to take that right away. It was something that we died, bled, and fought a struggle for many, many years. People were murdered. I've known too many people who were murdered for the right to vote. These kind of things kind of make me upset when I talk about them. However, we have to keep on struggling. And now when they say that corporations are people, I get really, really perplexed because I'm in the age of 2016 and looking around and looking at mechanization, looking at the mechanics that they're making to take the jobs away from people, working people. The people would not be working at all. And what are we going to do with this, with the disposable humanity that we have? I'm not quite sure how that's going to work out. Young people who are facing struggles. I'm so happy to see young people who are out there working and keeping the dreams alive of those of us who struggle, those who've gone on. Yeah, always, always, always. And people my age who are still struggling. But I must say that here in the District of Columbia, I'm very, very depressed about the situation, you know, gentrification, which has displaced all of the people that I knew for the most part. I live in Northwest, and throughout Northeast, when you're driving around, you don't see any people that you knew or that you know, and you only see dogs and bicycles and other kinds of things that are in your way, and very rude people. I won't dwell on it, but it disturbs me. Also, a living wage. You cannot earn a living wage in this city in order to be able to live here. A living wage. Your restaurant workers, the people who have the minimum wage jobs. I know that California has voted for $15 an hour in increments. Washington, D.C. is supposed to be doing the same thing, but how are we going to exist in this country? And across the world, I'm not only talking about here, but across the world. I think of, at times about where I would like to travel somewhere, but Ray Charles said the world is in an uproar, and danger zone is everywhere. So there's nowhere to run, nowhere to hide from the people who are in charge, the one percenters. We can't get away from the one percenters. They are dominating. And when you see people like Paul Ryan, who was obstructed recently yesterday, and the mainstream news refuses to acknowledge your presence here in this District of Columbia, the nation's capital, we know that we're in trouble. We know that we're doing what's right. So I want to say that all of the people who are struggling, who have struggled, who've gone on, Ella Baker, Ben Lou Hamer, and many others that I work with, gone on, but we're carrying on the work in their stead. And for people like Cold Pink, I see them everywhere. Everywhere. I love it. I love it. I love it. Right in your face. I'm an in your face person. Mr. Ron Moten, I spoke to him a few minutes ago. He came on WPFW, and I was happy to hear his voice. We need these voices out there. We need the voices of the people who are struggling, who are on the ground, and to carry the message forward. Thank you, my brothers and sisters, and keep on pushing.
Yes, yes, yes. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
As you can see, today is Racial Justice Day, But as you can see, I am undeniably black and unapologetically Muslim. It is truly an honor to have each and every one of my sisters and brothers here today before me, and you all standing in solidarity with me. Thank you.
Yeah.
So I'm going to keep the program moving right along. And thank you so much to Rock, right? Because if you work full time, then you deserve a full paycheck, don't you think?
Yeah.
We deserve a living wage, right?
Yeah.
And we're here today to send a message to elected officials in the top 1% to stop balancing their budgets on the backs of working families. Are you with me?
Yeah.
All right. All right. Another thing that I always say is I was forced into this movement. This was not a choice for me. I didn't have a choice when I woke up this morning. I didn't have a choice in terms of what my situation was and what country I was born and when I was born and what the circumstances before me were going to be. But I have a choice today, and I choose to be a part of this movement. When I was forced into this movement, I was in between 7 years of unemployment and underemployment. My house was constantly in between foreclosure and forbearance. And I just can't describe what that feeling is when you don't know if you have a roof to put over your kids and your family's head at night. Right? So we're going to have Skyla Poindexter Moore from Empower DC to come and talk to us. Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Skyla Poindexter Moore, and I am a D.C. resident, been here 39 years my whole life, and I'm raising my family in public housing. I wanted to come here to talk to you all about something that's happening right here in D.C. and all over the country, but we're in D.C., and that's where I live, and it's displacement. Ms. Ladner, who spoke earlier, talked to you about gentrification in D.C. Government is not happening for us, it's happening to us. There's no democracy here in D.C. We have to actually go and shut down government meetings. We have to shut down photo ops. We have to protest. We have to do things just to get our voices heard. In public housing, Congress has systematically, consistently taken money out of public housing to the point where we are living in slum conditions. And what's even worse about it is that they blame us for it. They tell us, you folks tearing up your homes, y'all in the projects tear up. Well, if you give me a sheet of paper as a door, then what is going to happen? It's going to fall down. It's going to crumble. There's no investment in public housing. And actually, the only investment in public housing now is to tear it down, to demolish it. Our city right here, right now, Muriel Bowser put $53 million in the budget to tear down public housing and $15 million just for repairs for a one-time repair fund. One time, not even recurring. Now, imagine this. You're in your home. You're in an affordable home. You're with your family, and there's no repairs done. You're living in basic crap, and then the city comes to you and say, because you live in crap, we have to move you to another piece of crap so that we can build your place back up so that rich white folks can come in and move in, and you may or may not come back. This is called displacement. When you're forced to move from your home and you don't have a say in it, that's not democracy. It's dictatorship. We're told you have to move. And some people here in D.C. with their families have had to move over and over and over because we've had 8 properties torn down here in D.C. 8 properties. That's thousands of units of public housing that have been destroyed. And when it comes to talking about housing, just a minute ago, nobody talked about public housing. Nobody brought up public housing. Everybody thought that it had to be broken down and mixed income and deconcentrate the poverty. Well, the way that we know how to deconcentrate poverty is to give people the resources they need to come up out of poverty. So if you put a bunch of us together, you put a bunch of us together on a unit, on a public housing property, it's not because we are inherently violent. It's not because we're inherently criminals. We don't have the resources we need to uplift ourselves. Congress has taken money from public housing systematically. So now what we're looking for here in D.C. is for our local government to step in, to say we're going to fund public housing, we're going to preserve public housing, we're going to invest in public housing, and we don't just want to demolish it, we want to invest in the people. We want to develop the people, not develop the land, not just develop these buildings. Where's the development in the people here in D.C.? Where is that? We don't have that. So we've been working on this and working on this, and I want to give a shout out to Ms. Latner, who talked about gentrification, because it's real. It hurts. It hurts to see where the neighborhood you came from, you can't even go back to it because somebody has moved in your place and you're treated like a visitor. I'm not a visitor. They say, hey, welcome to the neighborhood. I've been living here. I've been here my whole life. So I just really, I thank you all for coming out. I want you to all Google Empower DC. Empower DC is really leading the charge in stopping displacement in public housing. We need public housing. We've lost so many units, and homelessness is through the roof. And our city acts like they don't see that the more you demolish, the more homelessness has skyrocketed here in D.C., and we're not going to take it anymore, and we're to the point where we're up for civil disobedience. This is what this means. Occupy Berry Farm, we're not leaving. There's a movement here in D.C. that says we are not leaving. So when it comes downtown, when we have to lock arms around our properties, when we have to sit in, you know, in public housing, if you get arrested, you get thrown out. Not before you even get charged, before you even get found guilty, you're thrown out just because you're charged with something. So we can't afford to get arrested because we'll lose our housing. But we need folks like you who will sit down and lock arms and say, we support. Shout out to the signs right there, Justice for Berry Farms, right here. Berry Farms is on the chopping block. It's on the chopping block. We need our homes. We're not just those people in the projects. We're human beings. We're families. We're people. And we need our homes. So thank you. Google Empower DC. Join Empower DC and tell Congress to fund public housing. Thank you. Let's give my sister Skyla a round of applause. Thank you, Skyla. So I'm going to keep this program moving right along because we have a message to deliver today, don't we?
Yeah.
We want money out of politics, right?
Yeah.
And we want racial justice now, right?
Yeah.
All right. Hi, everyone. How you doing?
Yeah.
You ready?
Yeah.
My name is Grace Martinez. I serve the movement with United We Dream, which is the largest immigrant youth-led network in the country. I'm here to say that I am undocumented, unafraid, and unapologetic. And at the core of my existence in the work, there's one truth that I know that we all share, is that Black Lives Matter. And so as immigrant youth, it was important for us today to show up in solidarity with our brothers and sisters that are undocumented and Black, with our folks that are being killed in the streets, and the way that money and politics has also led to the lives of people being taken away. It has led to people being put into deportation proceedings and people making money off of the backs of Black and brown bodies. And so for us, at the core of today, it's making sure that we are standing in solidarity, but the other piece is that we are making a commitment to each other to combat anti-Blackness in every space that we occupy, to combat anti-Blackness in the messaging that we have for today's action, in the messaging that the media will push on us. And so that is, if you're ready to do that, raise your hand. Can I hear you? So in honor of all of the work that folks have been leading, let's do a quick chant. So when I say no justice, no peace, no racist police.
Yeah.
Ready? No justice.
No peace.
No racist.
Police.
No justice.
No peace.
No racist.
Police.
What do we want?
Justice.
What do we want it?
Now.
What do we want?
Justice.
What do we want it?
Now.
Go and get it. Black Lives Matter. Thank you so much. All right. Now let's call up Anise Jenkins. Stand up for democracy in D.C. Free D.C. What do you want?
Statehood.
When do you want it?
Now.
What do you want?
Statehood.
When do you want it?
Now.
Thank you, Democracy Sprint.
Yeah.
What do we want?
Statehood.
What do we want it?
Now.
What do we want?
able to uplift Sister Anise. Thank you so much. And before her, we had Sister Graysa Martinez. Thank you so much. Give her a round of applause. All right. Each and every one of these issues are important, particularly to black and brown communities. And just to keep the program moving along, now I am going to invite, Ron is with us, Brother Ron. We were calling you earlier. Say welcome, Brother Ron.
First of all, we know that we don't have any justice in America anytime a statue like that's still here. We know anytime a statue at a holiday that honors Christopher Columbus still exists, we got some problems here, right?
Yeah!
Am I right?
Yeah!
Am I right?
Yeah!
I want to start off with talking about D.C. a little bit. In the nation's capital, where 91% of our 15 to 17-year-olds are living in families where a mother normally is raising them by themselves, is a direct result of the criminal justice system that has taken fathers away and locked them up in alarming rates for nonviolent crime. But I'm going to take it a little further. In D.C., we don't have a prison for our prisoners, right? So they ship them all around the country where their families can't see them, and they separate us from our children, right? And then they enslaved them, working for slave wages, right? In Unicorn, right? And then they come back home and they can't get a job for the things they learned how to do while they were in prison, right?
Yeah.
So we have to stand up and say, enough is a what?
Yeah.
Enough is a what?
Yeah.
Enough is a what?
Yeah.
We are tired of seeing black and brown brothers and sisters, especially our sisters now, where in D.C., 30% of the lockups of teenagers are young black women being incarcerated. And we know that's a direct result of them not having a mother and father in the household that came from laws that were imposed by Hillary Clinton and her husband, Bill Clinton. And they walk around talking about they love black people. You're not my first black president, and you're not my first white president. Your laws destroyed the black community. Your laws destroyed the brown community. And then on top of that, the popular vote means nothing in this country. When the people vote for somebody, it means nothing in this country. But we go around the world telling people what they should be doing. Is something wrong with that, am I right?
Yeah.
Is there something wrong with that?
Yeah.
Is there something wrong with that?
Yeah.
How is it that the popular vote means nothing? How is it that somebody like Hillary Clinton, who everybody know that her cousin, her brother, her cousin, whatever he is, we don't know what they are. You know, one day he's with somebody else, one day he's with her, right? Am I right? So, whatever they got going on, I don't know what they got going on. But whatever they got going on, we know that what they did when Bill policies took the black man out the household, policies that say if you get a record, you can't go back and live with your family, you can't go back and live with your daughter, your mother, your wife. You purposely destroyed the black family, and enough is enough. We have to change these policies. Democracy now! Democracy spring! Democracy forever!
I'm here at Democracy Spring at Columbus Circle out in front of Union Station. I'm sitting here with Pat Sack. She's from Oakland, California. She's 79 years old. She celebrated her birthday on the march from Philadelphia to D.C. And she's going to tell us a little bit about that. So, wow, what prompted you to get involved in the action?
Well, I always have been kicking myself because I never got into the action in the 60s. I was too busy with my own little life. And I said, I'm going to do it this time because otherwise it might be too late to be out with a group. And let me tell you, I am so excited about being here. I am so pleased with our values and our goals to get the money out of politics and to deal with voter suppression. I hate it that people who happen to be poor or students don't get to vote. And I thought, this is not America anymore. This is not a democracy anymore. And we got to do something about that.
So Tell me a little bit about the march. I know you said that you marched about 5 miles a day, but mainly did the support for other people who needed support. So tell me about the march.
Well, the march goes pretty fast, so it's mostly for young people. Now, I can go 5 miles, a couple of times around Lake Merritt, but that's it for the day. So I rented a car in Philly, and I've been driving, following the march, having a radio to pick up people who are hurting or can't walk anymore or need a ride to a bathroom. And so I've been a support person, ferrying people around and trying to find some housing for us. One afternoon, we called so many churches. Do you know if you need a church, you're going to have trouble because all you get is voicemail.
Wow.
It's a funny world we live in.
So how many people started the march from Philadelphia?
I think there was 120 that started. Then people joined us along the way. I think we had about 300 by the time we got here. And people from every state, young, old, black, white, Asian, everybody. And when I'd stop along the way at a coffee shop or something and talk to the people, pizza shop, every person working told me how important what we were doing was, how much they had to work extra just to make a living these days. No pensions if you work for most corporations, and we were in the bank. They don't get any pensions. It's tough out there, and most people don't even know that. Yeah. So
tell me about Oakland. Tell me a little bit about the work that you do there and what's happening in Oakland. I know that the city's changing, rapid gentrification, and so many things are happening, so much action and activities coming out of Oakland.
It sure is, because Barbara Lee is our congressperson. Do you know she was the only congressperson not in the Senate, but in Congress, to stand up and say no to the Iraq War? And so we have what I think is the most integrated city I've ever seen. Years ago we went to the Bill Clinton celebration after he was elected president, and let me tell you, it was like being at the UN. It was amazing. Everybody together. And that's the way I've seen Oakland. I think it's an exciting city. And yes, we have problems. Yes, we have homeless. Yes, we have corruption, everybody does, but we're working on it. Yep.
So what prompted you to come all the way over from Oakland to be a part of this?
Because they were talking about the things I'm concerned about. I don't like, you know, when I was young, I was taught you got to dance with them that brought you. So when I hear a politician make a very fine speech, I go to Vote Smart and see who's funding him. And then I know who they're dancing with. Okay?
Do you have a pick for this presidential election?
I sure have. I like that Bernie Sanders is not a Wall Street puppet. I was sorry to hear, I hate to be frank, but I heard Cory Booker gave a wonderful speech. I think he's running for vice president. And I went and looked him up. Same Wall Street as Hillary. So I was so disappointed because he sounded fine, but I know who brought him to us.
If you're just tuning in, you just heard some of the voices at the racial justice rally at Democracy Spring, ongoing here at the nation's capital. And you also heard 79-year-old Pat Sachs, who traveled here from Oakland, California to participate in Democracy Spring. This is On the Ground, Voices of Resistance from the Nation's Capital on 89.3 WPFW, your Pacifica station for justice and jazz in the nation's capital. I'm Esther Averam. Now, when we come back, poets from the new anthology, Resisting Arrest, Poems to Stretch to the Sky. Stay with us.
Like a river flowing free through wind in the tea. Free to be sure of what I am and who I need not be. Free from my worries. Whoa.
In the introduction to Resisting Arrest, an anthology of more than 80 poets, editor Tony Medina writes, "No need for me to further enumerate the endless trail of police violations, brutalities, killings. I'll let the poets sing their names. I'll let the tradition say amen. For the great and socially committed poets assembled herein have been engaged in call and response, bearing witness to the maladies of a nation whose so-called founding begins with brutality and policing, begins with genocide, confiscation, and death in the name of profit, greed, and expansion. The poet witnesses in this collection distill the horror and let in the light of our common humanity. They remind us of a universal hurt, grief, anger, rage, shame, and love that we all can recall when confronting the blunt reality and the savagery of abuses associated with corrupted power, indifference, and intolerance. This is not a catalog of death and despair. This is a work of resistance and resilience. These poets sing songs of love, which is what this book is essentially." Guernica, Tony Medina. Well, welcome to On the Ground, Tony.
Thank you. That was beautifully read.
Well, I tried my best. So, with that, why don't we go right to some poems?
All right, beautiful. I'll start off with the opening poem, which I felt was really apropos. It's by the great poet Martin Espada. It's called "How We Could Have Lived or Died This Way." And it begins with a quote from one of his heroes, Walt Whitman. "Not songs of loyalty alone are these, but songs of insurrection also. For I am the sworn poet of every dauntless rebel the world over." Walt Whitman. "I see the dark-skinned bodies falling in the street as their ancestors fell before the whip and steel. The last blood pooling in the last breath spitting. I see the immigrant street vendor flashing his wallet to the cops. Shot so many times, there are bullet holes in the soles of his feet. I see the deaf woodcarver and his pocket knife crossing the street in front of a cop who yells, then fires. I see the drug raid, the wrong door kicked in, the minister's heart seizing up. I see the man hawking a fistful of cigarettes, the cop's chokehold that makes his wheezing lungs stop wheezing forever. I am in the crowd, at the window, kneeling beside the body left on the asphalt for hours, covered in a sheet. I see the suicides, the conga player handcuffed for drumming on the subway, hanged in the jail cell with his hands cuffed behind him, the suspect leaking blood from his chest in the back seat of the squad car, the 300-pound boy said to stampede barehanded into the bullets drilling his forehead. I see the coroner nodding, the words he types in his report burrowing into the skin like more bullets. I see the government investigation stacking, words buzzing on the page, then suffocated as bees suffocate in a jar. I see the next black man fleeing as if the fugitive slave once fled the slave catcher, shot in the back for a broken taillight. I see the cop handcuff the corpse. I see the rebels marching, hands upraised before the riot squads, faces in bandanas against the tear gas, and I walk beside them unseen. I see the poets who will write the songs of insurrection generations unborn will read or hear a century from now, words that make them wonder how we could have lived or died this way, how the descendants of slaves still fled, and the descendants of slave catchers still shot them. How we awoke every morning without the blood of the dead sweating from every pore." Martina Spada.
Wow. So when you put together this anthology, I guess we should just start with you putting it together. What prompted you to gather these works into a book?
Well, I've been wanting to do an anthology like this for like at least 20 years already, mm-hmm. You know, because I've had my own individual poems enough on police brutality to fill a collection.
Right.
And I remember talking to a friend of mine, you know, and I had this title, Resisting Arrest, since I did the Mumia anthology in defense of Mumia back in, what, 96? Mm-hmm. But I did get an email from Richard Krywek, who's a novelist, a poet, and a publisher of Jacquard Press out of North Carolina. And he broached me with the idea because everybody had been wanting to do something like this, I guess. And I said, wow, it just so happens that I wanted to do this. Mm-hmm. So that's how it began about a year ago or so.
When I heard you read the Espada poem, I thought about the fact that so much of this crisis and this state violence has been captured on video because he keeps talking about what he sees.
Yes.
What he sees. And what do you think that poets can bring to this crisis and what we're seeing on the page that people aren't seeing in these videos?
Well, you know, poets bring that whole heaviosity of humanity to the equation, whereas you might just see somebody getting shot 1,000 times, played 1,000 times on the TV or a YouTube clip or whatever. They get inside, you know, the inside of the story. They get into the people, into the heart and the minds, and able to transport people into, you know, seeing this level of violence and brutality from a whole different perspective.
Right.
That normally, you know, a journalist would not.
Right, right. I guess, you know, I feel like, wow, the stab. Well, the thing is, you know, being a journalist and a poet, I guess I take a little issue with that. I think that good journalism should convey that humanity, but what's
good journalists are not allowed. Well, a lot of good journalists are not allowed to,
right?
Given the parameters they have to work within, and given the mainstream media or whatever. But there are some serious journalists out there that are able to bring in all these voices and all these stories from a different angle as well.
And the fact is that when people are looking at videos on social media, there is no journalism really involved.
Yeah.
Really, it's just there is no humanity, or when you say the heavy human element, you're just seeing killing after killing without the analysis.
Yeah, and it's mind-numbing. It's like watching a video game or something.
And you know, some people are actually looking at the videos from a different perspective as entertainment. You know, you
and
have,
some people are really pained by this type of stuff, so they don't want to even engage it.
Right.
You know.
You got another poem?
All right, I'll read a poem by Rita Dove. The great Rita Dove.
Former U.S. Poet Laureate.
Yes, and Pulitzer Prize winner after Gwendolyn Brooks. Teach Us to Number Our Days by Rita Dove. In the old neighborhood, each funeral parlor is more elaborate than the last. The alleys smell of cops, pistols bumping their thighs, each chamber steeled with a slim blue bullet. Low rent balconies stacked to the sky. A boy plays tic-tac-toe on a moon crossed by TV antenna. Dreams he has swallowed a blue bean. It takes root in his gut, sprouts and twines upward, the vines curling around the sockets and locking them shut. In this sky, nodding like a dark tie, the patroller, disinterested, holds all the beans. August, the mums nod past, each a prickly heart on a sleeve. Rita Dove.
Wow. There's a big variety of poems in this book. Tony Medina here is here in studio, fellow poet, professor of creative writing at Howard University, and editor of the new anthology, Resisting Arrest, by Jacquard Press. And this is the debut on today's show.
On Emancipation Day.
Yes, on Emancipation Day here in D.C., the launch of this anthology, and we're really honored by that. So why don't we read one more poem? We always say we have less than an hour,
okay.
So we are kind of running out of time. But
I'll read a poem of mine that's in here. It's called From the Crushed Voice Box of Freddie Gray. And it kind of conjures up Joan Didion's A Year of Magical Thinking. America has like, what, 400, 500 years of magical thinking. I am the magic Negro, the black Houdini who done it to himself. I handcuffed my own damn self. I threw myself in the back of the patrol car. My hands shackled behind my back, slave ship cargo ago. I am the magic Negro, the black Houdini, who done it, do's it to himself, him black self. See, ma, no hands. I snatched the pistol from the white man's mind, from the back of the patrol car. Suck on this, Houdini. I grabs the gun and shoot myself in the chest, neo-colonial style. The autopsy report says, damn, would have been easier to walk on water. I bet you a quarter he done shot himself. I am the magic Negro, spineless. I broke my own spine after hog-tying myself into a pretzel. Even Houdini, who done it, would envy. Only to turn myself into a human pinball rattling around the steel gullet of a Negro pickup truck. Once reserved for newly arrived potato famine New York Irish drunks down on their luck. Me, moi, it is I who was Othello. Oh, hell no. Yes, me, the magic Negro, the black Houdini, who done it, do's it all the time to himself, his own damned self.
Tony Medina, editor of the new anthology, Resisting Arrest, Poems to Stretch to the Sky. A fellow poet, professor of creative writing at Howard University. And the book is from Jack Carr Press, and it's being launched today here on the ground. And
another thing, all proceeds go to the Whitney M. Young Social Justice Scholarship, sponsored by the Greater Washington Urban League Thursday Network.
Okay. All right.
So it's going to go to a student that's studying social justice or working in police reform.
Awesome. So where can people find the book?
The book can be found at Jack Carr Press's website, jackcarrpress.com. They can order it from any bookstore they want.
Okay. Excellent. Okay. Excellent. Well, that will do it for us on the ground this morning. I want to thank again Tony Medina, Gerald Horn, and thanks to our engineer, Luke Stewart. And thank you so much for listening. You can reach the show at onthegroundshow.org, where you can now listen to all of our shows and past shows. Please like our Facebook and Twitter pages at On the Ground Show. Now stay tuned for the next hour, when I will take your story of the week, along with Chantel James, during Friday's open mic edition of Community Watch and Comment. And I think Gerald Horn may rejoin us. So stay tuned and raise your voice out there. Peace.